Hola, soy Señora Beichner from the Foreign Language Department, reading from Part 2, Chapter 2, page 154. As the months went by, Margot wrote letters to Mommy and included the photographs we took with Poppy's Polaroid camera. There were pictures of us wearing our new clothes from Kmart, of Carlos riding the used bicycle Poppy bought for him, of us playing baseball in the yard. We took pictures of us posing on Poppy's red Mustang. In pictures, you couldn't tell we still got carsick. Of us celebrating our first American holiday, the 4th of July. In the pictures, we were smiling, as if life was more than we could ever have hoped for in this perfect place. Through the pictures, we wanted Mommy to see we were doing great, and she shouldn't worry. We never told her about Poppy's dark side. We didn't tell her that sometimes when he drank too much, he would yell at us and hit us with his belt. That was our secret. In the white area of the pictures, Margot always wrote, "To our beloved mother, whom we love and adore despite everything, your children, Margot, Carlos, and Reina." Throughout the summer, I looked forward to starting school. I couldn't wait to meet my teacher, make friends, get my own books. Mila said teachers here in the U.S. didn't hit their students like in Mexico. Best of all, she said my teacher wouldn't yell at me for being left-handed. "That stuff your grandmother told you about the devil is pure nonsense," Mila said. When she said this, I started liking my stepmother, and I stopped being so afraid of going to school. I hoped one day I'd be like Mila, fluently bilingual and a U.S. citizen. When September came, and I turned 10, I started feeling afraid again. The next day, I'd be starting 5th grade, Carlos 7th grade, and Margot 8th grade. I couldn't help feeling terrified. We didn't speak any English. How would we communicate with our teachers? How would we make friends if we couldn't understand what anyone said? But Poppy wasn't worried about our lack of English. He was worried about something else. "Don't tell anyone you're here without permission," he warned us. "We won't, Poppy," we said. "I'm serious," he said. "If you tell anyone anything about how you got to this country, you can kiss it goodbye. You understand?" Poppy said we had broken the law by coming into the United States. I couldn't understand why there would be a law that prevented kids from being with their parents. That was the only reason why I'd come to this country after all. "And you three better do well in your classes," Poppy warned, "because if you don't, I won't wait for La Mira to come deport you. I'll send you back to Mexico myself." "We won't disappoint you, Poppy," we promised. "Está bien," Poppy said as he finished his beer. "Well, off to bed. You have to get up early tomorrow. And I wasn't kidding about what kind of grades I expect from you." We left the kitchen and went into the living room where my stepmother was watching TV. At seeing us come in, Mila got up and headed to the bedroom. Margot and I pulled out the sofa bed and laid down. Carlos usually slept on the floor, but that night, since he was anxious about the next day, he snuck into our bed. We huddled together while we listened to a helicopter flying very close to the apartment. For a moment, I forgot we were in the fourplex at Highland Park. I was back at the border, running through the darkness, trying to hide from the helicopter flying above us. Once more, I felt frightened, thinking that if we didn't make it this time, we'd lose our chance of having her father back in our lives. "It's okay, Nena," Margot said, putting her arm around me. I snuggled against my sister. The roaring of the helicopter faded away. "We're safe. Now go to sleep. It'll be a long day tomorrow." I tried to do as I was told, but it was a restless night for me. I still wasn't used to living in a noisy place. At Abuelita Chinta's shack, the nights were usually quiet, except for an occasional barking of dogs and the passing of the evening train. But here, it seems as if people never slept. Cars zoomed by on Avenue 50 at every hour of the day. Sirens echoed against the buildings. Helicopters roamed at night. Sometimes we even heard gunshots farther down the street from the gangs in the area. The only familiar sound I heard at night was the lonely whistle of the midnight train. That sound always made me yearn for my country and for those I'd left behind. Early the next day, when Mago, Carlos, and I stopped at the corner to say goodbye to one another, my fear returned. Aldama Elementary was up the street. Mago and Carlos had to walk the opposite way to take the bus to Burbank Junior High. "Walk me there," I pleaded. "I don't want to go alone." "It's only 3 blocks away, Nina," Mago said, "and Carlos and I are late. We'll miss our bus." "Don't be scared," Carlos said. "Everything will be fine." "We'll see you when we get home," Mago said, waving goodbye. I watched Mago and Carlos rush down Avenue 50. I wished I wasn't 10. I wished I was old enough to go to junior high with them. I made my way to Aldama Elementary. I stood outside for a long time and watched children walk in. Some of them came in with their parents. All of them were strangers to me. Back in Iwala, I'd known by sight, if not by name, almost every parent and kid who had gone to my little school. Aldama was 3 times as big as my school in Iguala. Suddenly, I realized I had no idea where to go. I was so used to being with my sister, having her show me what to do, that now I was completely lost. I couldn't go through this by myself. I couldn't walk into this big school all alone. A bell rang, and soon everyone was inside. I peeked through the main doors, and I was overwhelmed by all the doors, the hallway that seemed to never end. My school in Mexico didn't have hallways. It didn't have so many doors. Tears threatened to come out, and I was angry at myself for being such a useless coward. A mother walked by and asked, "¿Estás perdida?" At hearing the familiar Spanish words, I immediately confessed that I didn't know where to go. She took me to the main office. The receptionist asked my name and called my classroom. A few minutes later, a boy my age came in. The receptionist said something to him and motioned for me to follow him. The boy didn't say anything to me as we made our way down a long hallway. We went into our room, and the teacher, a tall woman with short blonde hair, looked me up and down and asked me something in English. I wanted to kick myself for coming late. Now I had to stand in front of the whole classroom while everyone watched as the teacher spoke to me in a language I didn't understand. I looked at my feet. My toes wiggled within the new tennis shoes Papi had bought for me from a place called Payless. I didn't like wearing tennis shoes. After 10 years of walking around barefoot or with plastic sandals, my feet felt trapped within the thick material. "Solo español," she said. I looked into her eyes, the color of the sea. I thought about our trip to San Monica Beach, of Papi holding my hand. "Please don't let go of me, Papi." "Español?" she asked again. "Sí," I said, relieved she spoke Spanish. The knot in my stomach began to loosen. "Me llamo Reina Grande Rodríguez. Discúlpeme, maestra, por llegar tarde. Le prometo que no lo volveré a hacer." She shrugged and smiled. "No entender mucho," she said. "Oh," I said, disappointed that she didn't speak much Spanish. She pointed to a table at the corner of the classroom and gently pushed me forward. I headed to the table. There were 4 other students there and a young man. He had black hair that was spiked with so much hairspray, it looked as if he were wearing a push broom on his head. He had a very skinny neck and a big Adam's apple that went up and down like a yo-yo when he swallowed. "I'm Mr. Lopez," he said in Spanish. "I'm Miss Anderson's assistant." He had us introduce ourselves and asked me to go first. "Me llamo Reina Grande Rodríguez," I said. He glanced at his roster and then looked at me. "Here in this country, we only use 1 last name. See here," he said, showing me the roster. "You're enrolled as Reina Grande." "But I'm Rodriguez too," I said. "It's my mommy's last name." He asked me to keep my voice down so I wouldn't interrupt Miss Anderson, who was speaking to a class of about 20 students. I wanted to tell him I had already lost my mother by coming to this country. It wasn't easy having to also erase her from my name. Who am I now, then? I'm sorry, Mr. Lopez said. That's the way things are done in this country. From now on, you're Reina Grande. The students at my table laughed. One of them said in Spanish, but she's so little. How can she be a queen? And a big one at that. Mr. Lopez told them not to tease. He asked them to introduce themselves next. There was Gil, Maria, Cecilia, and Blanca. They were from Mexico, like me, except for Gil, who was from some place called El Salvador. I didn't know where that was, but he spoke Spanish too. For the rest of the day, I stayed at the table in the corner. Mr. Lopez taught us the alphabet in English. It was difficult to pay attention to him. Miss Anderson was speaking loudly to her students, and it was hard for me to hear Mr. Lopez. Most of those kids just looked like me. They had brown skin, black hair, and brown eyes. They had names like Gonzalez, Garcia, and Hernandez, and Martinez, and yet they could speak a language I could not. Whatever Miss Anderson was teaching the other students, it wasn't the alphabet. She wrote words on the board that I couldn't understand. I watched her mouth open and close as she talked. I wish I could understand what she was saying. I wished I didn't have to sit in the corner and feel like an outsider in my own classroom. I wished I wasn't being taught something kids learn in kindergarten. Reina, pay attention, Mr. Lopez said. Now repeat after me. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. By the end of the day, I still hadn't fully memorized the alphabet and the numbers in English. I walked back home feeling scared. I thought about our trip to the beach, of Puppy holding my hand. If I didn't do well in school, I wouldn't make Puppy proud. It still hurt me that he hadn't wanted to bring me at first. And because of that, I was desperate for him to one day say, Chata, you have made me a proud father. I am so glad I didn't leave you in Mexico and instead brought you here to be with me. But he wouldn't say that if I didn't learn. Since I got out of school before Carlos and Mago, I had to go to the neighbor's house until Mago arrived to pick me up. Miss Giuliano lived across the street from us. She was an old lady with hair like cotton and eyes the color of my birthstone, sapphire. Her sweet smile reminded me of Abuelita Chinta, although she wasn't missing any teeth like my grandmother. She didn't speak much Spanish, but she spoke Italian and English. She was the first Italian I'd ever met. When she opened the door, she said, Buongiorno, bambina. She smiled and pulled me into her house. It smelled of bread and garlic. Hai fame? Miss Giuliano asked. She pointed to the stove where she was making minestrone. Sì, tengo hambre, I said. I sat on the stool and she gave me a bowl of the soup. She asked me a question in both Italian and English, but I only understood the words scuola and school. No good, I said, shaking my head. No pude aprender inglés. No capisce, she said. Dare il tempo, bambina. Time? She was wrong. I'd never be able to stop feeling as if I didn't belong in that classroom. I wished I could tell Miss Giuliano that school wasn't the only place that was difficult to get used to. It was true, we had lots of new, wonderful things here in this country, but there were things we'd had in Mexico that we no longer had. Mago, Carlos, and I missed our freedom. We missed walking around in the neighborhood and feeling safe. Everyone there knew us. The only person we knew here in Highland Park was Miss Giuliano, since she lived across the street. Also, because of the gangs in the area, Papi wouldn't allow us to go too far. Kids here didn't go outside to play in the afternoons.
Women didn't come out to embroider and chat with their friends. Men didn't come out to have beer and play dominoes. The streets here were empty except for the cars speeding across Avenue 50. We had no one to play with except one another. I didn't have the words to tell this to Miss Giuliano, but she seemed to understand how I felt and squeezed my hand. After my meal, Miss Giuliano took me to her backyard where she kept chickens in a coop. As I helped her clean it, the smell of chicken poop and feathers reminded me of Abuelita Chinta's doves. The smell suddenly made me even more homesick for Iguala. I touched my belly button and remembered the bond that tied me to my mother and to my country. Would it be so terrible to be sent back? Even though I like this beautiful place, I still miss my home. It's still called to me in different ways. Mexico was in the coos of the pigeons resting on the roof of our apartment. He reminded me of Abuelita Chinta's shack and waking up to the cooing of her doves. Mexico was in a cup of hot chocolate. It was in the smell of cilantro and epazote we bought in the market. Mexico was in the whistle of a midnight train traveling by Figueroa Street. Mexico was in the smell of wet dirt after it rained. If I returned to Mexico, then I could see my little sister, my mother, and my sweet grandmother again. I would also get to keep my two last names. I would be in a classroom where I understood what my teacher said. But what about my dream of one day making Papi proud? I stood there in Miss Giuliano's backyard feeling as if I were tearing in half. Where do I belong? I wondered. Do I belong here? Do I belong there? Do I belong anywhere?